This podcast takes you into the rarely discussed realm of the personal decisions leaders have taken that have influenced their business decisions and developed them into the leaders they are today. The refreshingly honest experiences of those who have been very successful provide an insight into the challenges they faced, the successes they achieved, and the people who influenced them along their journey. Here's our host, Mark Silvera.
Hey, welcome to Business Made Personal. Thanks so much for downloading this episode. It features Lyndon Turner. Just to give you a little bit of background on Lyndon, Lyndon has been the Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director of Nautilus Marine and NM Insurance since 2007. He also leads a team of 70 staff across both Australia and New Zealand, has had over 25 years insurance industry experience, and during that time has held senior management positions and worked across all insurance functions, including claims, underwriting, broking, advocacy, and development. Awesome background there, Lyndon. Lyndon is also a former director of the Boating Industry Association, steering committee member of New Zealand Underwriting Agencies Council, a member of the Australian Institute of Company Directors, and former chair of the Underwriting Agencies Council of Australia. Welcome to the program, mate.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me. Congratulations on the podcast.
Lyndon, I just want to delve back a little bit into your background. Where did you grow up? What was your sort of childhood background?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Grew up in the Hills District of New South Wales, Sydney. So one of three boys, luckily enough for my parents, general schooling, straight through, finished schooling into a working environment, almost straight into insurance after a quasi gap year, Mark, and really have been there ever since. And so growing up was a strong family life network, good bunch of mates and family networks. So it's been a strong upbringing, and again, sort of moving into that environment now where I've, you know, probably developed that to a point where, you know, a couple of young kids myself, or three kids myself, you know, not all boys, luckily for my wife and myself, but that sort of environment, Mark, a strong family upbringing into what we're doing now.
Yeah, brilliant. So, Lyndon, you mentioned that you had a gap year and then you went straight into insurance. I've got a couple of questions around that. So, you know, the gap year is a relatively recent phenomenon. Do you think that helped you, or did it, you know, stall your career a year?
Mark, I don't necessarily think that I had a really clear defined career path leaving school, to be honest with you. I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do. So I suppose that gap year came from the basis of not wanting to ever commit to, I suppose, what the next stage of my life was. But I think you find out sort of pretty quickly that that environment doesn't necessarily pay the bills. And the question would be is what do you want to do? You know, there's a path of, you know, tertiary education, or going through an environment where you can, I suppose, work and work on the job and go through that learnings there. And I was lucky enough that I had a really good mate at the time who worked in insurance and worked, he was in workers' comp. And our broker of ours, Mark Jones, and Mingzi, I hope you're well. You know, Mark sort of was talking about what he was doing, and a job became available at MMI Insurance in those days, and sort of applied for it and went through that path, and, you know, understood that was a great opportunity to, you know, enhance what was studies at school in that business studies, Mark, and I suppose bring that into a vocation in what was the start of registering motor fleet claims back for a major telecoms company back in those days. And it was, I suppose, not necessarily the most diverse of roles, but it gave a really good understanding, and I could see what the career path could be through insurance, and sort of took that on from there, and then could see that there was opportunities, you know, within insurance, and went to the path of, you know, studying through ANZIF and having a great opportunity of diversifying my learnings through the MMI into Allianz Group when I moved, you know, into across to Club Marine before the broking days, and of course now at NM. So yeah, back to your question, I think that gap year was not necessarily one that I chose, that I had a strong plan ahead of me, but I think you also need to look in those times and say, well, what does the future look like? And it's really important to understand that. I think that when you make that choice, is what was good about that landing on insurance and counsel was that there was a lot of diversity attached to entering into financial services, and especially insurance, Mark.
So, Lyndon, I mean, I don't know what you were like when you first joined the industry, but, you know, I didn't know up from down, and I certainly hadn't intended to stay in it. It was a sort of stopgap for me. At what point during that time did you go, okay, this is something that I want to be involved in?
I think I took counsel at one stage, Mark, where I was maybe a bit stale in my choice and deciding whether insurance was going to be for me. I can't exactly recall the time frame that I was involved there, and I was perhaps looking around and seeing is another job around or vocation more suited. And I'd gone close to accepting a job outside of the industry. And I recall having a couple of conversations. One was with my manager at the time, and then his manager, and also my father at the time, and we're looking outside of, you know, what that opportunity was going to be. And maybe I was attracted by a couple extra dollars, Mark, to be honest with you, a bit young, and I said that up and down. And I think those really good insights about, you know, well, where is that going to lead for the next 5 years and what does this lead to? And so I think at that time, that's when I made that choice that not necessarily insurance was going to be the career for the next 25 years, but for that period of time ahead is knuckle down. Here's what the opportunities are around where I believe I was probably questioning where it could be, Mark. So that was really good counsel I took from some strong-minded but also very mature heads at the time, and I really respected that. And I'm glad I made that choice to listen to them as opposed to maybe listen to others at that time, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, and it's fortunate that you've had that opportunity, you know. How did you go about seeking that discussion, Lyndon? Was there something happening that you thought, okay, I need to go and speak to someone, and I'm going to speak to a couple of people plus my father?
Yeah, I probably didn't do it the right way, Mark. I almost sort of took the job just about and then sort of spoke to the manager and said, look, this is what I'm looking to do. And as I said, a couple of mature heads at that time said, look, you know, hopefully, and I'm sure that they wouldn't have put their own reputation on the line to say, look, we think there's probably a career for you if you knuckle down. So hopefully they sensed that there was, you know, some reason to support staying involved for, you know, their own departmental and business needs at the time. For Dad was always a very good counsel, and as fathers do, and I hope, you know, I would be at times, is you seek the right opportunity to say, look, should I go left or right here? And whether you agree or not in that family network, it was just a really good sounding board for that. So, yeah, I think it was the maturity of that. And, you know, we see it across our business as well, Mark. You know, there's younger staff coming through. What choices do they make or are looking to make? And I think that what I take from that is, you know, we should be always open to younger staff who maybe are looking for, and not necessarily within the business or just, you know, friends of, and, you know, kids of friends, is to be a nice sounding board at times and not be critical, but to listen and perhaps provide some guidance, whether it's listened to or not. I really appreciated that opportunity at that time, and I'm glad that I listened. But more importantly, I'm glad that they gave me that time to not tell me what to do, but to give me some alternate thoughts, Mark, at the time.
Let's talk a little bit about Nautilus. You've been at Nautilus since 2007. And during that time, you know, you've probably had to reinvent yourself. And at times the business. How did you go about doing that?
Well, I think we've only got 45 minutes, Mark, for this conversation, mate. But there's different stages, and I certainly, and let's look at perhaps where it was in 2007 and where it is now. Is it was quite a different environment. It was a different environment. The market was completely different, both, you know, from a capacity point of view, maturity of our business, you know, or you know, growing our business. And of course, you know, really where the market was at from a reg point of view and operationally, I think that drove a level of success when we understood what our customers wanted, because our customers were, and our partners at the time, they were the personnel with our staff, of course, that were going to drive the opportunity for us to grow. And you know, did we make mistakes on the way through? Absolutely. I think any business leader will say that they do. And I think any that say that they don't are probably not being as truthful as they should be. But, you know, we learn a lot from those mistakes. But in saying that, back to your question is, you know, how will, you know, we engage regularly? We've also had to make sure that the business has gone from a small, you know, sub 10 employees to now 70 staff. Is that creates a challenge as you go through, is adjusting your structure regularly and making sure that it can be catering for the next phase of, you know, growth coming in, but making sure there's accountability, but also that ownership around those responsibilities. So I think that's been a big part of my personal adjustment, Mark, is, and I think there's a great phrase that works is you don't buy a dog if you want to bark yourself. You really need to employ, empower, monitor. And that's, I think, a really good part of how the business, especially in the last maybe 6-7 years, has had, I think, that nice flip of growth and that also flip of sustainable growth. So it's probably the agility, but, Mark, also being in front of it. You've got to be regularly talking to your employees, your staff, your leadership team, trusted partners, just making sure that you're close to what's going on. Not be overbearing, and I probably have sometimes some comments back to me from my staff, and I appreciate them. I appreciate their honesty as well, because I enjoy working with them, is that there's probably times that you just step off. There's also times that they need to know that I just need to be across what's going on. And if there's any wind or change coming through, is being ready for that, Mark, and you know, being able to move the business when that's required. And that's probably comes through, say, in the diversity of the products. You mentioned Nautilus. Nautilus is our largest brand, our most well-known brand, but we've gone through a brand evolution in the last couple of years with NM Insurance being rebranded and repositioning NM Insurance and what that stands for, which is a diverse range of specialist products across not only pleasure craft, but of course, you know, motorcycle, caravan, commercial, marine through our Proteus brand. Is it's being able to adjust, as I said, you know, learn from the mistakes if we've made some, but also recognise where those successes are and celebrate them, Mark.
And look, it's a tricky manoeuvre. You know, I've been involved in businesses where I'm one of 10, and next thing you know, there's 40, 50, 60 people in the business. I've always found it a little challenging, because what you're able to do with a team of under 10 is significantly different if you don't delegate responsibility.
Yeah, the law of diminishing returns will come in even more if you then try and make sure that you're taking up more time of your staff than you need to, what you employ them for, but you need to have that balance. And ours has come not through acquisition, Mark. We've had a cultural kill strategy every day of the week, and there's no doubt about that. But strategy is critically important, of course, to make sure there's a guide of where we're going towards and how. The beauty is, and I went through a town hall update with my staff, which we do every fortnight of what we're going on, is I really enjoy celebrating the fact that I can thank staff who have been with us for 10 plus years, and it's regularly coming up in our town halls and thank yous, and we celebrate them, is we've got staff that have been through that amount of change. And so their willingness to change, Mark, has really helped. And it's trying to understand why that change is required, and they might disagree with it, and we just work through to understand, you know, why that change is occurring. Do we perfectly know? But I think once they understand why, and again, the agility that if we make those changes and for things that change either around us that we can't control, or we've made mistakes around those, then we adjust and we move back, but we recognise those. So I think it's all that, Mark. It really is strong staff engagement is really important. And that also means then, of course, that I unfortunately can't engage as strongly with all the staff that I'd like to, but the managers are empowered to make sure that their engagement is really strong. And we've done, I think, a really good job of that in the last few years to improve that cultural expectation. So I think it's coming through an NPS survey saying that, you know, our partners are saying that it's working. Again, not perfect, Mark, but getting better and we want to work harder at it. So, yeah.
Lyndon, as a result of COVID-19, in an interview you gave to Insurance Business Magazine, you said something that piqued my interest. You said that your company's messaging is now more customer and business partner focused. I want to ask you, do you think as an insurance sector and as an insurance industry, do we do that well? Do we do the customer and business partner focusing well?
I think anyone would say that we don't do it perfectly, but I don't think that's a criticism, Mark. I think that's just probably just the environment that we're in, where the vocation of insurance hasn't been a chosen path for a long period of time, and perhaps it's improving the communication. I know, and Neva do a fantastic job at it. You know, I say all bodies do that well, and individual major insurers, companies do that well to promote. I think looking at other fin services, as they work really well at talking about the opportunity that's ahead of you if you choose that path, and improvement around what insurance can provide and the diversity. And we look at the diversity within our business, and we've got now actuaries and, you know, legal, you know, compliance, reg. There's fantastic opportunities that all of those or various occupations can do within an insurer or within an underwriting agency or a broking house. It's amazing the value they create. So I think improving that through both frequency but also messaging would be really good. I think it does. It helps in the talent pool. The Great Resignation is underway, of course, and hopefully we're changing that. That bell curve will change shortly. But we want to attract good people into the insurance industry. Now, how do we do that? We say, well, you know, choose us over other fin services potentially or other occupations around insurance. Ours was about primarily, Mark, trying to look at what our business stood for and how it's needed to change its positioning. Ours was about the fact that we and I think AAMI do a fantastic job at advertising at the moment about, you know, cheap insurance. Ours was about building the brand value in what we try and build in our products and services as opposed to a price conversation. That's just about what it was about, Mark. We're just trying to improve, of course, what we're trying to achieve in our products.
If you don't mind, shift the spotlight back to you, sir, and talk about you, because that's what we're here to do. I'd like to ask you, what has the industry given you personally that you never expected to get out of it?
Probably an even harder question, Mark. It's given me stability in, you know, the opportunity for employment. And clearly, you know, people go to work to do a couple of things. One is to, you know, cover the cost of living, of course. The other is to make sure they have a profession they can be proud of. I think just the learnings that you get every day. It's amazing what, through conversations you have, through exchanges you'll have, through strategic opportunities ahead of you, what every day creates in this space, in the insurance space, but also being part of what is a worldwide market. But let's go back to it. What we're doing every day in our space is protecting customers' livelihoods. I mean, again, going back to where the value proposition is that, you know, the world doesn't function without protection of assets and, you know, protections for us, you know, protection of, you know, personal assets and liabilities arising from. That gives a great level of satisfaction. And you can go home and know that you've done that. I mean, it's probably seen, unfortunately, not as well as that sometimes, but look, great connections, great opportunities for relationships that can build a network of people that have diverse thinking, great staff that push you, challenge you. I love my staff challenging us. So I think it's just the diversity of people, Mark, but going back to it is that, you know, that vocation protects what is livelihoods every day. If we can get that right, let's not ignore turning a profit. You know, profit shouldn't be a dirty word either, but do the right thing by those customers and get in the back. It's a fantastic way of being able to go to work and go home. And, you know, ultimately, we've got a chance to, for me, you know, lead a business of some really talented people with some really great partners and customers. And again, going back to it, in the end, what we're doing is assisting customers to enjoy their livelihood. So, you know, what could be wrong about that?
You know, I'm really interested, for example, you've got a family, you've got three children. Are they likely, you know, what do they see when they look at you in terms of your career? How did they feel about what you're doing? Do they see it as being, you know, something that is a value that they might want to consider as they develop?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't bridged that conversation with them. They're not sort of, my eldest is probably at that conversation. Interestingly, she's heavily involved in business studies at school and has not been through any push from my side. I'm not quite sure it's through as a, you know, high level of respect for what I do. I'm not quite sure the reason why. They're very good at it. And whether that's because of, I'm sure it's more natural talent, probably more from mum than me, but that's just pushing through nice, fantastic. And I haven't pushed her down that path. But in saying that, I think, again, going back to your point, I believe they probably are starting to understand now, and certainly my eldest, as she starts to get to that age into the later years of her schooling, what insurance is about. And so therefore, will they choose that path? I don't know. If they would I say it's a bad thing? No, it's a fantastic opportunity for them. But, you know, let them, you know, sort of choose their own vocation as opposed to sort of forcing down there. I'm not quite sure they're broadly across what occurs. They certainly are aware from, you know, usage of some of the assets attached to what we do as an insurance, because we do get actively involved in those, and plenty of boat shows in their life, Mark, don't worry about that. So they're aware of some of those dynamics, but, you know, how does it, the nitty-gritty work? They're probably not at that. So I'm not quite sure how they're going to choose that path, Mark. But if they do, I think it's a fantastic opportunity for them, and I'll give them all support they can.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, and I'd be the same. Lyndon, you mentioned a couple of people that you took counsel from earlier. Who would you say has been the most influential person in your life?
It's hard to narrow it down to one, Mark, and I think it's probably slightly unfair to do that. I've had fantastic mentors over the years and still enjoy those opportunities to have conversations where required about challenges that might be going on, good and bad, and also about, you know, next phase of growth. Yeah, it was a couple of really key ones. You know, I mentioned about my father many years ago. He stepped out of a very secure, you know, well-paid role to run his own business, wanted to run his own business, and stepped out of that at a later stage. And I could see that through my upbringing about the challenges that created for him. And that was a really important juncture, I think, in our life. And, you know, he could also strike that balance between running his own business and also making sure he looked after the family. So, you know, mum supported him really well. So from an early stage, I could see what those challenges created when, of course, you know, those stepping out and taking a risk, taking a chance, you're going to get one chance at life, Mark. So it was important. I think earlier in my days, through the club, there was a great conversation early about what Nautilus is going to be with some early investors and supporters. And at the time I worked with Ian Frith, who was obviously a very successful insurance leader, took strong counsel from Ian, and now he's out of the insurance game, now involved in, you know, alpaca farming as his primary vocation. So stepped away and great conversations about building a business and having that support and left and right. And then through to now, you know, we've got, you know, strong ownership from a, you know, listed company, take counsel with a lot of those leaders quite regularly, which is good. And even outside of that, as I did the NEVA mentor-mentee program recently and was lucky enough to be paired with an emerging broker. I think I learned as much in that environment as hopefully he might have taken a couple of points from me. So it's the diversity of the conversation. Back to that point, Mark, I don't want to embarrass one or three. I think there's a council of 15 or 20 that I enjoy, and depending on the time frame, I enjoy hopefully building that network as well, where I can have a conversation. And I think it's the maturity in those leaders, Mark. We've got some fantastic people who are leaders in this market, and you pick up the phone and say, look, can I just have a quiet chat? They're always willing for a cup of coffee or a conversation. And you know, if they know the extent of it's, you know, it's no criticism, let's have a conversation about it. You got to pick your mark sometimes, Mark, and I'm sure you would respect that and know that as well, and with the audience. But there's great leaders that provide that. For me, yeah, 5 to 10, I suppose, core, but to name one over another might be slightly unfair to others because they've all provided great value, Mark.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was more sort of interested as to whether you did have that sort of resource, if you like, and then it's clear that you do and still do, which I find fantastic. And it's one of those things I think that we tend to underrate as far as a resource to be able to help. And what you say makes perfect sense too, Lyndon.
My only comment to that, to addition to that, is that if you're ever offered support, whichever role you're in, to be able to have a conversation to allow your professional development to grow is don't ever ignore that. You know, don't think that it's being used for the wrong reasons. It's being there to try and assist, because the people that are being asked to work with you are there trying to help you and therefore ultimately help you grow and the business you're employed with or your role to grow. You know, certainly, as long as there's some ground rules around it, it's a fantastic way of being able to grow, learn, listen. And the deeper you can get within some boundaries, I think creates a really good outcome, mate. Yeah.
So, Lyndon, I'm aware that you've had some challenges in your business career, as we all have, you know, after you've been in it for a while. But I wanted to ask you, what was the most significant turning point in your life?
There's been a few, Mark. Running a business, any business, it keeps you up late at night and gets you out of bed early in the morning. And so the challenges, some are at a more extreme level. We've been through significant change in our business at different times through differing results or differing conversations or differing partnerships. So those all manifest out. There's no one individual, again, defining factor, Mark. In fact, some of the perceived smaller challenges have probably led to more difficult thought bubbles late at night. So and some of the perceived bigger challenges, in fact, have been probably blown out of proportion, in a market sense as opposed to what the actual outcome was. These changes, sometimes they're driven, Mark, by forward thinking as well, is that, if you can see there's a challenge coming up, you've just got to get in front of it. You've just got to say, okay, let's have a conversation. This doesn't seem to be working for this reason. Get both sides, to that story, look at it, and then say, okay, well, what's the best outcome? And it's working together on that outcome. It's not brain, surgery, Mark. It's trying to have a, respectful conversation around trying to make sure that there's the alignment of an outcome together.
You talked about your younger self a little bit, and if you were able to go back to that young man who was having that gap year before he actually started working in insurance, what advice would you give him?
Yeah, again, within 45 minutes, Mark, it's amazing what we'll move back to that time or plus. Oh, I think it's, it's two ears, one mouth, Mark, sort of just listen a bit more. I love the youthful exuberance that comes through all the time when you're engaging. I'm engaging now with younger people. It's amazing when you get to this. You still think you'd be younger than what you are, but just a sense of, I think, maturity more in decisions made, Mark. And I think one of my, I shouldn't say regrets, because I think that I've had a fantastic journey and still on the way. I'm talking like now I'm in a different phase even more, Mark. But, it's probably about then, had I had my time again, I probably would have invested earlier in some tertiary studies to be able to support. I think the next, now I'm slightly catching up to those, Mark, when time frames and having children and family is puts a pressure. Now, that's not a regret, but that's just a stage of life. So probably a little bit of that, Mark, would have been really. But ANZ have done a fantastic job to be able to support my studies, as did employers at the time, to be able to then build up my knowledge in that regard. So it doesn't mean that you don't go down that path straight away. You miss out on post-schooling education. I'd support that for anyone, because it's a fantastic opportunity that ANZIF do and others. But that's probably where I'd, if we do it again, maybe knuckle down a little bit more in those latter parts of the schooling, Mark, as opposed to slightly being distracted. But that's a stage of life and I don't regret it. But, looking back, probably that, and listening more maybe to wiser heads at that time, Mark, put it that way.
It's hard to listen to wiser heads at that time, Lyndon, when you know everything anyway, right?
Correct. I do hear that regularly as well, Mark, at times, yeah. So, and you don't want to lose that opportunity for a, you know, a young person to be a young person, a kid to be a kid. That shouldn't change, Mark. But in answer to your question, maybe it should take me a little bit more time to catch up to those aspirations to still be able to complete, you know, certain things that I desire in my life. And I still have some life goals to complete those, Mark. It's just a, probably needing a little bit of spare time to get it done. It'll happen, but that's probably that, Mark.
I'm interested in your comment on education, because I've asked this of a few people, because when I left school, I hated it so much. I vowed and declared I'd never go back and study anything ever again. You and I basically got involved in the industry. We learnt on the job. We did it through experience. And later on in our lives, I mean, you went on and did your tertiary studies. I went on and did a Bachelor of Business majoring in insurance. I want to ask you the question. There's two questions. The first one is, where do you rate education these days for people in your business?
Really highly, Mark, and we support, you know, all reasonable education costs through the business. It's critically important to develop those staff. And, you know, I think there's a comment about what happens if you know, educate them and they leave. Well, what happens if you don't educate them and they stay? So let's develop them up. Again, it's part of that diverse range of thinking, is that someone that comes in that doesn't broaden their grey matter and try and learn from what is, you know, experience of others, I think is just a bit of a narrow view. So the education is critical. It's a time consideration though, Mark. Also, committing to education is great, but if you cannot commit to it, then maybe then it doesn't then have a demoralising effect that it didn't work. And so therefore, is it for you and does it right? I think you need to make sure that when you commit, you can commit, and we'll support staff to do that. We encourage that across the business. It's really, really important. And, you know, it broadens their horizons. We have product lines that are considered niche, and we respect that and are proud of that. And so therefore, and a lot of the studies that I did, you know, earlier, I've never touched those product lines. However, did I have a baseline understanding for them? I broke for a few years, Mark. I needed those, and of course relied a lot about my underwriters and my, you know, sort of peers around me to support in that regard. But you get a diverse range of thinking, especially then also when you're choosing a path and a career. And I'm less involved in trading and underwriting these days, Mark, and I miss that, but I enjoy the opportunity for leaders in the business to do it, is what those studies gave me was a good baseline for the next phase of my career. And so therefore it wasn't the be-all, but it gave me a good baseline to it. And as far as education, whether it's formal or not, just read, absorb, you know, listen, there's fantastic opportunities to, you know, pick the paper up every day and read the business section. There's fantastic opportunities of understanding what's going on in your business life, and they have really good articles that can help in developing your own skill sets. I still do that regularly and I enjoy that, and you take little bits out. So education, I think, can take different paths. But the formal side, everyone should be proud of the accreditations that they have for the work they've put in, because it does take up a fair bit of time, a lot of time, and the glass can only so far full, Mark, of course, but you need to adjust it. So it's well worth it. Absolutely. Critically important.
It leads me on to my second question, and that is, you know, when you and I were going through our work lives, we were trained on the job. You were not allowed to do anything until you knew that policy wording and you could prove that you understood it and you knew the clauses and you were able to handle the questions that came as a result of it. How well do you think we're doing that internally within businesses these days, Lyndon?
Well, COVID, I think, slightly changed that, Mark. We look at the environment where as you go back, as you're saying, to years ago, where a senior underwriter would sit next to the junior underwriter, and the junior underwriter would listen to the senior underwriter's phone calls, conversations. There was a nice peer-to-peer environment going on every day or every hour, every minute. And there was a great learning that went in. So an underwriter could develop their skill sets in that specific environment. COVID, of course, then, of course, moved us back, for obvious reasons, back to our home environments and remote locations. And I think we're still working on that hybrid model as we go back. And many, I think, have differing versions about what the new normal is, Mark. But I think that on-the-job learning to develop a career is critically important. So the question would be, how do we do that in the balance of trying to make sure we have responsibility to be able to cater for individual needs where a hybrid working environment now exists. So I think the new sort of training module, and one example of what we do is we've got a couple of underwriting hubs that are still operating together, and so they can still have that listen and learn. The ones that don't have that listen and learn have a different way of collaborating to experiences. And so that's going to be a really important part of how the next sort of cycle of developing underwriting claims technicians, actuaries, all functions of insurance do grow. And so you see great training modules and again, go back to associations and how associations work well to educate the masses, which is really important. But everyone's got to understand that. We're in a risk-based business. How do you make sure that risk-based conversation is appropriate for the appropriate premium for that risk? And of course, the terms attached to that. So I'm probably not the best answer for it, not being in the size of an organisation that might have better protocols for it. We're listening, we're hearing what's going on. But it's really important that I think that we, I learned a lot on the job being an underwriter and in claims and back in my development days working with my peers, you learn a lot from just listening on the floor. And so how does that change? And I see Lloyd's as a great example, has mandated it back to being on the floor in Lifeshare, which I think is fantastic. They want to make sure that culture of collaboration and conversation is there because that's core to their business. So I think that's really important how, from an underwriting perspective, that occurs. But of course, broking, same difference, is that you learn a lot from being in office environment. We call it the water cooler chat here internally. You learn so much from collaborating with your peers and, again, listening to mature heads. So we'll see how that develops. But it's a challenge, I'm sure, to everyone, Mark. It would have to be a challenge to make sure that, you know, sustainability of the next phase of leaders in their business and decision makers is off a sound base.
And I think the pressure's increased with the volume of work we're expected to go through these days as well, right? Because you just don't have the time. We're speaking with Lyndon Turner, who's the Chief Executive Officer and Managing Director of Nautilus Marine and NM Insurance. Lyndon, that role is a significant one, and obviously it's a business that you've grown very, very well over a relatively short space of time. What would you say is the most difficult part of being in your role?
Sometimes just managing expectations, Mark, and I think that's probably just expectations of, you know, so customers, the environment around you, all stakeholders. And so, and stakeholders we define as a number of, and including, of course, you know, shareholders, partners, customers, employees, regulators, and we value all stakeholders of the business. It's just trying to balance sometimes those expectations. I think that it's setting a clear path, listening, getting together, the team together week before last to set a plan for the next midterm ahead of us. So that challenge, I believe, also is at our leaders as well. So it's just managing those expectations around the environment that you're controlling and sometimes having just to make tough decisions. Okay, well, that's fine. We've considered some of all parts, and sometimes some don't agree with that and they may wish to find a different environment to have their own sort of career progression and success, and we respect that. We need to be clear and concise but also listen, and we listen, make plans and grow. But probably that, Mark, I think that the balance would be is measured. Sometimes you've got to say no. And sometimes you might just say, you know, yes, but yes with these caveats.
We've all got to add value at every level these days, don't we, Lyndon?
Correct. And I've got to be told also as well that, you know, sometimes that, and, you know, I'm told regularly and I'm proud to be told is my epiphany is not maybe going to be the best for the business. And that's where I need to be considerate as well, that we're listening across. And again, our leaders are as important as any stakeholder. And that's where I think, again, that's managing my own expectations as well. What I'd like is sometimes need to be balanced by what is realistic these days. But that's probably me maturing a bit more still, Mark. So, yeah.
Aren't we all, my friend? Lyndon, if you could change one thing about our industry, what would you change?
I think, again, back to the comment about attracting talent, I think if we could find a way to attract talent better or respect for what we achieve, I think that would be a really good driving factor. That would certainly help solve some challenges that seem to be, I think, moving around in conversations and the environment. Once someone gets into the insurance industry, they don't get out too often, Mark. It's probably trying to get them in more, and Australian cricket team analogy there. So I think that if we can improve what the outcomes are to the community, and that's a complex challenge, but we do a lot of good things across this industry, and I think it's probably that, because then that improves customer outcomes, customer expectations, improves the engagement with customers. And we have a multi-channel distribution model, including through our partners as well as, you know, direct to consumers, albeit a smaller part of our businesses. It's improving the communication or engagement with our buyers, I think, through recognition of what we're trying to achieve together. I think that's a really important part of that. So I think we do a good job at it. I think that would improve the opportunity for talent acquisition, talent, you know, holding on, growing them through our businesses and growing businesses. But I think unfortunately, the community sometimes can have, unfortunately, not the most positive of rapport or perception of rapport with what the industry is trying to achieve. And we do a lot of good, I think, as a lot of that, Mark.
And I think it's consistent whether you're in broking or whether you're an underwriter or whether you're an MGA, that bad news travels very quickly. No one ever talks about how much money we put into the recent Queensland floods as an example, but they'll certainly talk about the fact that, you know, Mr. Smith had his house flooded and he had no insurance cover and he thought he did, and the insurance company are now reneging and not paying the claims bill run.
As I said, it's a very complex matter. Going to the past, and we're talking a lot with brokers, and luckily enough, we're engaging with brokers again more and more with conference season being back and being able to shake hands. The amount of work that goes into a broker securing a placement for, I would say now, the majority of businesses in this market as opposed to the minority many years ago, it's a difficult set of work. It's a lot of work that goes into it for them to provide that right outcome for that business owner or a variety of occupation. It's tough. It's hard work. So let's not ignore that, but let's also understand that it's rewarding if we get that right. And so it's a lot of that comms and understanding that. Yeah, that's probably a bit of a cycle as well, Mark, and I'm not quite sure that's going to change in a hurry, but it's more work. And I think it's just that understanding of what the profession does do for the community as well as for the people that work within it.
And look, I think there's a real opportunity in the InsurTech space to make a difference to businesses around some of those manually driven processes, I would have thought.
Absolutely. And look at how that's grown, the investment going in, I think it's a fantastic vehicle. And what will InsurTech look like in, the short midterm period of time? It will become, certainly more than normal. And there's some really strong, good businesses that are leading in that space. We watch them and applaud them.
Lyndon, what do you wish you knew before you started your career?
Mark, to throw some curly questions. I didn't choose this career, put it that way. I moved into looking for a career and a way to mature through life and be able to, and I don't necessarily think that choosing, that first job, for want of a better phrase, was going to be something I was going to do for a long period of time. And again, had I chosen incorrectly, that might have led me down a different path. So I suppose it's been through some good fortune that I've landed in this space, Mark, and been able to grow a business in this space. Had I not, would have been keen to probably grow a business in a different space, Mark, and so would have given me the same outcome. So I don't really have many in the ways of regrets or fork in the road decisions that were good. Again, probably just that time to educate a bit earlier would have been nice, I think, for my personal opinion. But in saying that, I've been very lucky, healthy kids, wife, family network, and that's strong. So that should be, I should be happy for that, and I am, and the career path as well. And again, great leaders to commit. And mate, there's still a lot ahead. There's still a lot ahead of what I'll achieve. So I still think those decisions can be made at this juncture, and I still am trying to make them, Mark. So no major regrets. I'm certainly happy with some of the choices, unhappy with some as well, but that's life. Very happy and pleased that I can have the opportunity to lead this business, and I do enjoy that. I enjoy that every day. It challenges me, but I enjoy it. I love it. But also, that opportunity is being done by people backing me. And if they, again, I respect that, and I try and back people into those environments as well. So a bit of that, but probably that education early, Mark, would have been probably a bit better. But I landed in some fantastic jobs, of course, that were close to what I enjoyed doing. So being on the road, working for a major pleasure craft insurer who, is not us, but being able to connect in that network was fantastic. It's the assets that it's a pretty cool insurance line to be involved in, to be honest with you, sometimes. So that's great. It has its challenges, but it's been a great path. And we still want to develop that out so other people can have that opportunity, Mark, to be able to achieve that with us.
Lyndon, I've only got a couple of final questions before I let you off the hook, and then I'll ask you if there's anything else that you feel you'd need and you wanted to add. But the second last question I've got for you is, what do you think are the common things people struggle with in developing their insurance careers?
I think it's the opportunities that they might be able to have ahead of them. I think having sort of good leaders to be able to talk to and learn from and grow with. I think developing leaders, we have a natural habit across, I think, this industry sometimes is taking good people and moving them into managerial positions. That's a big challenge for people. And so therefore, it's being able to make sure that your better employee may be the better employee, it may not be the better manager. So it's working to make sure that they can develop people and have good conversations with them and respect those conversations. So I think that's a really important part of that, Mark. I think that's really, really important to make sure that we have good leaders who can be developed as leaders, take their experience, but also bring through those people and have those respectful conversations and be leaders for staff. Because if you can get that part right, your customers will get the net benefit of it through the conversations and the outcomes. So that's probably the primary thing, Mark, I'd refer to. Yeah.
Do you think we do that well, Lyndon, given the fact that you've got someone that's brilliant at their job, but they may not necessarily be a great manager, but their aspiration is that leadership type role? Do you think that's a difficult conversation to have?
Well, it's maybe a question they need to have a bit earlier is, do they want to develop themselves into that role? Or, and there's nothing wrong with, a technical leader being technical for their career, if that's what their career aspirations are. But if their career aspirations are to move into a managing people is very difficult, Mark, and therefore developing those skill sets need to be that there's a plan in play to make sure that you don't lose that technical ability, that your customers and brokers and partners would like to achieve, and, you know, capacity providers to make sure there's right decisions being made. How do we educate? It's being able to access people that can then be their guidance to be able to say, well, I'm having a challenge. Can I have a conversation? So again, that mentoring part, I think, goes a long way. Probably just not throwing them in the fire, Mark, and then leaving them. You've got to be able to follow them. And that means if you're developing someone or bringing someone up, is you've got to be able to have that time to say to them, well, I'm here for you. I'm here for you to help. Because whilst you might wish to bring them up, so then, of course, they can then alleviate perhaps some of your time to free up what you achieve. It doesn't work that way. My experience is you still need to be able to provide them time to be able to give them guidance when they're having their challenges. So how do you do that? And there's some good external resources that can support in that regard. There's good business leaders, of course, that you can, you know, employ. But again, sometimes I think it's probably just more about, you know, if you're developing someone into a managerial position, is making sure that you're aware that there's extra challenges that come with that. And do they want it? But secondly, can you support them appropriately?
Final question to you, sir. So what's next for Lyndon Turner?
So we've just come off a mid-year planning session for the next phase of what NM would like to be. And so we've got some strong plans in place for the midterm. We're working to execute those, including our structures. There's a lot more ahead, Mark. Strong fire in the belly. I really enjoy the fact of where the business is. We've got fantastic partners around us at the moment supporting our businesses, all levels of stakeholders, fantastic customers that are buying in. We're communicating well. Short to midterm is some key goals, Mark, that I'm working on executing, and our leaders are doing that, and our key stakeholders are aware of those. Respectfully, I can't reveal all those in this podcast, Mark. I know our customers will be the first to be aware of it sooner than later, and our staff are well across that at a leadership level. So there's a lot more ahead. Look, for me, as I said, I still enjoy every day coming into this business. It's a fantastic business. I love it. I love the people. I love what we do as a product line. There's certain challenges that we get through well. So there's a few things ahead of us, Mark. I'm really enjoying that. I don't have a desire in the interim to, wind back for a different phrase. I'd like to make sure we can just keep developing our staff and being able to do that time to be able to let them through. And we've got really good leaders. And so a bit more ahead of me. I'd like to play a little bit more golf, maybe. Yeah, I don't do that as much. Also, I do spray them after about the 10th hole as well, as people have done that. So a bit of all that. Still got young kids. You know, I want to make sure they can have a great upbringing to be able to let them do their thing, but with a baseline of being able to make some mistakes, but not the real bad ones. It's a lot of that too. So it's balancing that a bit, Mark. And so I've got that, which is good. The business is mature. But yeah, a few things ahead, Mark. And don't worry, mate. You'll be the first to be told. Don't worry about that.
Lyndon, are there any closing comments or thoughts that you would like to share with the audience?
No, not really, Mark. I appreciate the fact that, you know, there's an opportunity to be able to have this conversation. I think that we should be proud of what we do. I think, and let's focus on, there's been a lot of change and good change, a lot for good reason, to make sure that the customer outcome from what we do is better. And underlying, and whilst there might be decisions about that made or changed to reg that may be polarising some people, let's remember what this was about. This was about making sure that the change to what we do and how we think and how we act is that right outcome. I think there'll be some natural, really positive outcomes that come from that, Mark. So let's be proud of that. Let's work hard. You know, we're only here once. Let's have a good crack. You know, chew off a bit. If you chew off too much, just keep biting. But if you think it's too much, talk to someone and spit it out. You know, just work hard, engage and talk. We should be positive about what we do. And I think majority of industry knows that. So let's keep cracking on. For me, just keep pushing on, Mark. Just approach each challenge, personal, professional. Get on, hit the golf ball a bit better, play a bit harder sometimes. Play a bit less, even more, put it that way, Mark. Yes. Keep learning. You learn a new thing every day. Now, if you can take that approach into it, pretty good lives. Post-COVID, I think it's an exciting challenge, I think, for everyone, how life looks post-challenge. You know, we're just facing an election coming up in the months. To be interested to see what's ahead of us. But again, just be agile and be professional. The rest of it will work itself out. Yeah.
Lyndon, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on Business Made Personal. Thank you so much for taking the time and sharing your thoughts with us.
Good on you, Mark. All the best.
Thank you so much for lending us your ears. Please remember to click follow on your podcast app or subscribe at bmppodcast.com.au so we can give you a sneak peek of our next guest. Until next time, I'm Mark Silvera, and you've been listening to Business Made Personal.